Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is WILP's Wake Up Call, WILP being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're brought to you every Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock by WCOMLP, your volunteer radio station, local radio station here in downtown Carborough. We have guests each week that bring you the really interesting and hot issues of the community, of the state, and of the nation. And today we're very fortunate to have three guests who are all from Democracy North Carolina, which is an organization that's been trying to promote democracy and voter-owned elections for many years. And maybe we'll start off with each of us introducing themselves.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us. First of all, my name is Christina Chenlow. I will be a senior at UNC Chapel Hill in the fall, and I'm interning at Democracy North Carolina this summer and doing some really cool things that we'll tell you about in just a little bit.
Okay, good. And next?
Thank you so much for inviting us out this morning. My name is Brian Allison. I am also interning at Democracy North Carolina over the summertime, and I'll be a rising senior in the fall. So yeah.
Okay.
And I'm Jen Fry. I'm the associate director at Democracy North Carolina and the supervisor for Christina and Brian. They're doing great so far, and really excited to tell you what we're doing this summer.
Okay, well then that's our good lead-in. Let's start off with what you young people are doing this summer.
Okay, well, we're here for 9 weeks, and a lot of the things that we're doing involve educating Chapel Hill residents about voter-owned elections, and we have a lot of speaking engagements throughout the Triangle and a little beyond that, too. We're actually one team of five that are interning this summer, so we have things going on all across the state. So Brian and I do things in Durham, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, and Carborough. So a lot of speaking engagements and meeting one-on-one with people, phone banking, and calling our supporters to see how they can get more involved in the work we're doing.
Okay, sounds like a busy and interesting summer, meeting a lot of people and getting the pulse of where people are at in terms of understanding what needs to be done to have more democracy here in Chapel Hill and in the state. Brian, you want to talk a little bit too about what you're doing?
Why don't you share our mission, Brian?
Yeah, what is it when you're having the speaking engagements? What's the message that you're trying to tell people?
Well, with the speaking engagements, we've actually spoken to a couple of groups in the area, a couple of groups in Chatham County. But what we want to do is basically get the word out about voter-owned elections and how they are vital tools to maintaining our democracy and keeping it responsive to citizens and not special interests and big corporations. So we wanted to get the word out about that, like Christina said, about the Chapel Hill Voter Owned Election Program, which is actually a pilot program in the state of North Carolina for on the municipal level. But what we want to do is expand it across our council estate, the rest of our council estate races. Currently we have three that are financed by that candidates have the option to use public financing for their elections or their campaigns. But we want to expand that throughout the council estate, throughout the rest of the council estate races here in North Carolina, and also we hopefully expand them to more municipalities like Chapel Hill that have 50,000 or more people, and then just make it more representative of the people in the area and just not large corporations who have the money to give to candidates.
So we're talking about money and the access that money buys, and I guess by voter-owned elections, we're talking about the voters owning or having their voice heard much more with the elected officials. And so you said Chapel Hill's a pilot program, so this hasn't been done before in a municipality?
Not in North Carolina. I think in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Portland, Oregon. I think those are the only two in the nation who have them on a municipal level right now.
Yeah.
So we're really ahead of the curve, and we hope that, in the future, a lot more cities and North Carolina will adopt them, and that we can just be a national leader. So, you know, it's a great thing, and like you were saying, it just takes, it puts citizens back at the forefront of the electoral process, which is very important.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't realize till a few years ago, you know, municipal elections, you don't think they cost that much. But in our neighboring county, in Chatham County, for the commissioners, Bunky Morgan was financed by all these developers from California and other places, so that they could get the kind of access into developing Chatham County, which then the good part was it aroused the citizens to such an extent that they did organize and take back some power and control with the commissioners there. But a lot of money poured in from out of state, and it makes you realize how important, you think, oh, county commissioners, but now we're realizing more and more what power they have over our lives. And so this is exciting and important work that you're doing. And you're working for one of my favorite organizations that used to be right in downtown Carrboro and where I live, and moved off to Durham. But Jen, maybe you want to tell us a little bit about Democracy North Carolina?
Okay. Well, we've been Democracy North Carolina since 2003. Before that, we were part of a regional organization called Democracy South. And Democracy South worked on a variety of issues, but the North Carolina Project has for the past decade or so focused on the money and politics issue. Our founder and director, Bob Hall, has been involved in campaign finance research for many, many years. He founded the Southern Exposure magazine with the Institute for Southern Studies back in 1973. I think the first comprehensive look he did at money and politics was the Jesse Helms-Jim Hunt race.
Yes.
And that really sparked an interest in Bob, I think, and also in North Carolina, looking at how big money campaigns influence the political process, how it determines who can run and who can win, and then what kind of policies come out at the other end. So that work has been going on for a long time. But Democracy North Carolina grew out of that research into much more than that. It grew into organizing and political advocacy to try to actually push reforms through at the state level that change that dynamic. So the purpose of the organization is to decrease the influence of special interests in the political system and increase civic participation. So we're working on two fronts, getting the money out and bringing more voters in. So since 2003, we've really started to focus a lot more on the voting side of it as well, pushing for things like same-day voter registration.
Which was successful.
Yes. Over 250,000 people used same-day registration in 2008.
That is amazing.
Those are people who would not have been able to vote otherwise. And just to explain what that is quickly, in case people don't know, it gives people an opportunity who've missed the 25-day registration deadline to go ahead and register and vote at the same time during early voting. You can't do this on election day itself, but even having it during early voting has made a difference in terms of voter turnout and bringing people to the polls, having people participate who might otherwise have not participated.
So trying to remove those obstacles that can get in the way when people are working and have a lot of other things on their mind. That's a big success, and I know you've had some other successes with judges.
Yes. In 2002, the state legislature passed the Judicial Campaign Reform Act. That was in response to special interest money coming into judicial elections. There are many states where at least some of the judges are elected to office, and North Carolina is no exception to that. Our highest level judicial offices are those that are voted in by the public. And prior to that act being passed in 2002, there was a lot of special interest money in those elections. People giving money to judges and then appearing before those same judges in the courts. There's definitely a conflict of interest there. After the program was passed, there was a dramatic decrease in the amount of money coming from trial lawyers and other special interests. It went from 73% prior to campaign reform to 14%.
That's amazing.
Right. And I think we've seen the importance of alternatives like voter-owned elections. If you look last week at this case in West Virginia, where a big campaign donor basically helped elect a certain judge who then was the judge in his case, someone was trying to sue him for interfering in a different coal company's business. And basically this judge who was hugely financed by the plaintiff in the, or the defendant in the case, ruled against the plaintiff, and the Supreme Court said that that influence is not okay. It was a really close vote at the Supreme Court level, but that just goes to show that all over the country, there's an attempt to influence elections at every level, including judicial races, and we need to do something about that.
Yeah, I heard about that one. That was also, that case was about Massey, the coal company,
right,
that's doing the mountaintop removal.
Right.
You know, so many times we don't make the connections of how it affects, you know, these things affect the air we breathe, the water we drink. You know, sometimes I know some young people say, oh, I'm not interested in politics,
right,
or, you know, oh, that, you know, and I try to say to them, this affects every aspect of your life. You better care.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of chicken and egg thing going on, too. I think a lot of people feel disinterested and put off by politics because of the money that's involved and because of the perception, at least,
mm-hmm,
that politics isn't for me, it's corrupt, mm-hmm, I'm not a player in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So that fuels the perception that government is corrupt, and it keeps people from participating. At the same time, because not enough people are participating, special interests do dominate and can get away with a lot more than if we were holding our elected officials accountable.
Boy, that is a good analogy, Jen. You know, I really will use that when I talk to some people. Would you tell us more about what difference you think these changes will mean in the elections with the money out? What do you hope for? With you're already talking about the changes that it makes in with the judges,
mm-hmm,
and that the Supreme Court essentially slapped the hand of that judge who would not recuse himself,
mm-hmm,
in this really important suit that affects so many lives in Appalachia, huge amount with their with the air and with the pollution from the coal and everything.
Right. Well, at the judicial level, you know, the hope is that the decisions made in the courts reflect,
mm-hmm,
justice rather than the interests of people who might be contributing to this campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a number of things like voter-owned elections do to make elections fair. It levels the playing field, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be wealthy yourself or have deep ties to,
mm-hmm,
wealth to be able to run for office. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
It opens the door to qualified candidates who otherwise might not be able to run.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let Brian and Christina jump in here. I'm not trying to dominate. But I think that's one of the most important things is,
yeah,
leveling the playing field, giving people an opportunity. There are other things that need to happen to truly make our election system one that's fair and open to everyone, but this is a good first step.
Well, I guess another thing that we want to see with the changes through voter-owned elections, we want to see more candidates out spending time with their constituents, because we've seen,
yeah,
that, you know, if you spend all your time fundraising, if you have to raise,
yeah,
$20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to run, I think we're talking in the community, and Christina always uses this quote. She says, you know, it's getting increasingly costly for, you know, people who are running for positions that only pay about $14,000, and spending upwards of $100,000 to campaign. And that's insane, you know. And you spend all your time fundraising, you spend all your time with these big donors trying to get, you know, 20,000 here, 10,000 here, and you're not out talking to the people that you serve.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that we want to change here. We want to make it more responsive to people. I keep saying that, but it's very important for an elected official to know the people in his community, to go out and be able to say, yeah, I know so-and-so on this street has an issue with, you know, that development, or I know,
mm-hmm,
so-and-so on this street has an issue with, you know, that road over there. It's very,
mm-hmm,
important that they know the lay of the land in their own community.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding that, you know, that's not the case so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess what I would add, I mean, going along those lines, is that right now politicians can't make very risky decisions because they're accountable to special interests and,
mm-hmm,
to big corporations and, you know, these wealthy individuals who finance their campaigns. And if candidates are being elected through this new program, through voter-owned elections, then they're,
mm-hmm,
going to be responsive to the people. And so they can make risky decisions that maybe don't please the special interests the most, but that,
mm-hmm,
are really what they should be doing,
mm-hmm,
as elected officials that the citizens and registered voters have elected instead,
yeah,
of these special interests.
Well, I'm looking Oh, wait a minute. We're going to take a break right now to let you know who we are. This is WILP's Wake Up Call. WILP being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, coming to you every Friday morning. We have an underwriter that we're very happy about, Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street, right in the same block with, excuse the mention, McDonald's. You can find it right up near the corner. I've got to find some other reminder of how to find it. And they have wonderful books, and they also will order books for you. They don't have what you want, but it's also a community resource. You can go in there and find out all the activist things that are happening in the community. Just like we try to bring you information, they're a real resource of information of what's happening. And this is all because of WCOM-FM, your local radio station, and it's all volunteer run and has wonderful programs with music and other talks like ours. And you can get more information on WCOMFM.org, and you can get more information about WILP at trianglewilp.org. I also just want to tell you a little bit more. Your community radio station needs your support. I know you hear that from other radio stations. Well, this is one of the ones that really, really, really needs your support. How much is it worth to you to have shows like ours? And right after us, we segue into Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, one of the best shows on radio and TV. So if you're listening to us, keep tuned in for Amy right after us. And these shows are all brought to you by local volunteers offering their time and special talents for free in order to inspire, educate, and entertain you. And this station is on the air 24/7 and also on the net, as I just told you, WCOMFM.org. And I guess what they're saying, is it worth $2.50 a week, less than what it costs to buy just one super fancy coffee drink? A tax deductible, automatic, online donation of only $10 a month will help ensure that you can continue to listen in to the best of your community. So it couldn't be easier. We want to help you do what's right to keep this very democratic voice alive in our community. And that's what we're talking about today with Democracy North Carolina, about how to really keep democracy in the hands of the people and out of the hands of corporations and special interests like the Massey Coal Company. And I think what we're really seeing now is the whole health care. Everybody's saying, oh, it needs reform, but all the special interests with their money are hovering around, infesting Washington to the point, which I think is a national scandal, that single payer health care was not even on the table with Senator Baucus's Senate hearing about, you know, getting the players and really talking about how to fashion a health care bill. And then you find out, which, surprise, surprise, Senator Baucus is getting tons of money from some big healthcare corporations. And I'm not saying it's a quid pro quo, but certainly that influences what you think is important, because they do have a voice. If they put millions in your, or thousands or millions in your campaign chest, you listen to them. And unfortunately, I'm waiting for the Senate to get a campaign finance bill for the Senate, which has made, all of them are now millionaires, which was another thing I found out recently, which is really disgusting.
There is a federal bill for congressional public financing. It's called the Fair Elections Now Act. Okay. As a matter of fact, we're asking people to contact David Price to ask him to co-sponsor that bill. Right now, it's Representative Walter Jones and Larson who are the main sponsors of that bill.
You're kidding.
No.
Walter Jones is a complex person, I'll put it that way.
He is, but he's supportive of the idea of public financing.
That is fabulous.
Which is wonderful, and we'd like as many of the North Carolina Congress people as possible to sign on to that bill. It's House Bill 1826, and it's called the Fair Elections Now Act. People can contact David Price right now about that legislation. We hope they would do so.
Okay, House Bill 1886?
26.
1826. And the Fair Elections Now Act?
That's right.
And Walter Johnson, who was the other guy?
Larson, Representative Larson. I think his first name's David, but I'm not sure on that.
Okay, I never heard of him, but sounds like a good guy.
He's not from North Carolina, so that's why you might not have heard from him.
This Fair Elections Now Act would be for the whole country.
Yeah, it would be for Congress.
But for Congress. But we're trying to get hold of our North Carolina delegation to have them really work on this.
Right. As North Carolina is a leader in judicial public financing in the nation, we'd like our Congress people to step up and say this is important to us on the national level too. So that's why we're asking people to call David Price. Now, Representative Price is also had been working on a bill to revamp the presidential public financing program, which needs a lot of work, and that's important too. I know he's been pushing that very hard, so we need to thank him for his support on that, but also encourage him to sign on to this one as well.
Okay, that's really good, because it was so disappointing in the last wonderful election with Obama, but that I understand the present federal finance bill really does need to be brought into what's happening with money in these times, and it was disappointing that he opted out.
Right.
But I understand there were really good reasons for it, so we got to revamp it so there won't be any good reasons that they all will really need to do that.
Right. Yeah, the model of public financing really needs to fit the elected office. I think that's one of the strong things about North Carolina's program is the way these programs are modeled for the judges in the three Council of State races that now fall under the voter-owned elections program and even the Chapel Hill program. It's a good system. It's based on actual figures of what campaigns cost and to determine the amount of grants that you get. So I think that needs to happen at the federal level as well. Could we talk for a minute about Chapel Hill and how this program works?
Yes, we would love that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Do you want to try take a go at it, one of y'all?
Sure. Well, so voter-owned elections will be implemented in Chapel Hill for this year's municipal elections, and we're really excited about it. As we were talking about earlier, it really is a model in the state, and so all eyes are on Chapel Hill to see how this works, to see if it's worth expanding, or if it fails, then we should really, the legislators aren't going to waste their time on it. So we really need Chapel Hill residents to know about this and know if the candidate of their choice is using public financing. And the way it works is that once a candidate agrees to sign up for the public financing, they have to raise money from a large number of registered voters, and they do this with small donations from, I believe it's $5 to $20 for these races in Chapel Hill. And once they reach the qualifying amount that they need, they receive a public grant. And once they receive that public grant, they have to abide by the rules of the program, which basically means that they won't take any more money from individuals, PACs, anything like that. If they do receive any money, that goes back into the public fund, and they only spend the amount that's given to them through this grant. And that changes for the office, for the mayor, it's $9,000, and for city council, it's $3,000. And so they agree to spend that much money, and hopefully all the candidates that are running will be finance their campaigns through public financing to make it, to prove that they are viable candidates and that people do support them in their cities.
This is so exciting. This being a pilot program, I guess this means that no other municipality in the state is doing this.
Right.
And living in Carrboro, what about Carrboro? Are they interested in this?
That's a good question. I think Carrboro did last year lower the campaign contribution limit to $250, just as Chapel Hill has had for years. I think Carrboro might be interested. It's a good question for Carrboro. I think watching Chapel Hill will be good to sort of get a sense of how the program could work. There's actually a bill at the legislature right now that would authorize other cities to use the program. Unfortunately, it'll be limited to cities with 50,000 or more people. But this, we're not really sure the fate of this bill right now. It's House Bill 120. We're hoping people will contact their legislators about that as well. But that would let other cities in the state do what Chapel Hill's doing. Right now, mm-hmm. though, Chapel Hill's the only city that's authorized to have such a program. The state has to give cities permission for this, which seems a little strange.
But it does.
But that's the way it works. The state has to say, yeah, it's okay for you to try this. And then the city comes up with the ordinance and has to pass the ordinance at the local level. So this has been vetted twice, in a sense. The state legislature said, yeah, okay, it's worth trying. And then Chapel Hill worked really hard to find a program. Bob Hall helped State Board of Elections come up with this program. Mm-hmm. And then the council had to vote to actually make it happen, and they did. Mm-hmm. So now this is the opportunity to see at the local level what this program looks like.
Boy, you just wish that all of this had happened years ago, but thank goodness you're doing it now.
Yeah.
You know, and so Carboro, do they have less than 50,000 that bill would not?
Yes.
Oh, so that, I should know that, but I don't know the...
The other stipulation with House Bill 120 is that the elections have to be nonpartisan. So that does narrow down the group of cities that could use public financing, but still it opens the door to other larger cities to try this as well. So if that bill can get through the legislature, it'll be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is really exciting, and what's really exciting is you young people getting young people excited, because I think that the Obama election did get a lot of people looking at politicians in a different light and feeling that sense of inspiration that sort of counteracted the cynicism that we, you know, have been so prone to, that Jen alluded to earlier when we were talking about, you know, why should I bother? What does it matter? And it's really such a sign of hope to me and to all of us to see young people like Christina and Brian, you know, so actively engaged. Could you tell me just real quickly what got you to be such engaged citizens?
Well, I think just the realization that politics isn't just something that, you know, old men in Washington do, but that really affects my life right now, and that will definitely affect my life in the future. I mean, just looking at, you know, housing and healthcare and jobs and all this stuff in the budget, and you might say, well, how does the state budget affect me? And it really does. So just really understanding that it does affect everyone, and that, you know, by saying, well, I'm not really into politics, then that means that you're not really concerned with things that, I mean, selfishly, are really going to affect you. So yeah. I think that's the main reason.
Okay, and Brian, a little bit about what got you involved?
I just wanted to be a part of the change that was going on in my community and communities across the state. And what I'm finding is that more and more young people on campus at UNC, more and more young people out in the community are interested in, you know, getting involved with issues like this that pertain to our communities. And, you know, we think this is a wonderful opportunity to, you know, here at Democracy North Carolina, we're trying to get younger and younger people involved in the political process. And that's one of the legislations that, one of the pieces of legislation we're working on right now is currently packaged in the House 908 bill, which is the omnibus bill, the spending bill, but it's called voter pre-registration, and it's about getting younger people more involved in the political process by pre-registering 16 to 17 year olds. So it's very important that, you know,
so this became legally possible. It's now legally possible.
No ma'am. It's going in to vote in the Senate, maybe, or the House.
Right now it's in one of the committees. I'm not sure what
it is. Okay. So we're trying to get that through, and then you're going around and talking to young people. That would be right. Yeah. Getting them thinking of themselves as citizens. We have 1 minute. Is there any last little word you want to say? Farewell.
Well, thanks for having me. We really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about this. Even though voter-owned elections is something that's really good for the community, it's also something that's not mainstream at this point. And so the more we talk about it, the more people understand how the program works, the fact that it's optional, the fact that candidates have to prove their viability. They go through a rigorous process to qualify for these public grants. But in the end, I think it really does make a difference. It's one of many things that we need to do to improve elections and improve our democracy. We're on the web at democracy-nc.org. You can check out the website for more information. contact us, email us. We'll come speak to your church. We'll come speak to your group. Thanks for having us on.
Okay, this has been brought to you by WCOM.org and also WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And it's been a delight to have